Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
I don't know. Welcome, everybody. Of course, we're talking when we go live, as usual. That is
we always do
every time. It will never be complete silence where we're totally poised. That wouldn't be us. So anyways, welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus, otherwise known as Word Vomit. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, Pretty Ugly, and the Hotel series. With me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of the Bourbon books, which include Dibs Since September and Move on Melinda. Our guest today is Eliza Jane Brazier, author of Good Rich People. Welcome, Eliza.
I forgot to bring the, like, I have, like, I don't have a, the book to hold up.
And we had
we have a PDF.
We have a PDF.
Here it is.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
Emperor's New Clothes. You can't see it.
No, because so with a title like Good Rich People, we can just be like, it's so high end that it's invisible.
Yeah, no, it's you have to look it up, mate. You got to go find it yourselves.
Okay, and I even wanted to ask, and then we got distracted even before we went live, about your cover, because your cover just is striking with the cutout of the people without their faces.
It's like 10 feet away from the ground.
Go get it. We'll vamp while you do it, because that cover is just fantastic. Yay! There it is. See, it exists. But yeah.
Just like, a headphone set away.
Yeah, I've never seen one. I mean, I've seen pictures where the faces are cut off because that's just where it stops, but they're there and there's no face. And it's tripping me out. I really like it.
Yes. So, Eliza, tell our viewers and our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then about you, like a fun fact, or you can do two truths and a lie, and then a little bit about your book.
It's the hardest question. I don't know. I'm from Southern California. I lived in London for like 10 years, and I moved back to Southern California. Lived in LA for a couple of years, where I wrote this book. I have a horse in my backyard, and I have a dog.
With a horse and a dog and a book that was just released that's doing quite well, I mean, what else do you need?
Nothing.
No, exactly.
Do your horse and your dog get along?
I kind of keep them separated because I get too nervous. I only have had my dog for 2 years and I had my horse for 1 year. And like, I'm very anxious. So I think I need to like be more casual, because most people are like, cool. Like, I was thinking I want to go camping with my horse, and I'm terrified to take my dog, because I keep thinking of horrible things that might happen to her.
Yeah. Things that the dog gets, the things that get the dog.
She'll run away or whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
No, as a dog person, as an anxious dog person, I do understand. Like, last night my dog was coughing at midnight and I was like, should we bring him to the emergency vet? He was coughing.
The whole time today, I'm like, something wrong, like.
I know. My husband and I are like, did he eat poison? We're like, no, he didn't eat poison.
So, yes, exactly.
We've watched him all day. And then we're like, well, if he did eat poison, what would it have been?
This is why I'm a thriller writer, because yes. I'm exactly the same way. It's like, I keep imagining all these horrible scenarios, and I'm like, stop doing that.
Yeah,
well, I'm laughing because you guys are like,
there's the crazy
cat lady, and then there's the anxious dog person. So I like that there's like both things going on here.
I feel like there's like this like subsect of like thriller writers and horror writers, and of like, and we all have dogs, and we're all like, I should be medicated more than I am.
That's what the dog is for, right?
That's what the dog is for.
I prescribed myself a few animals.
I think that works. I don't see why not.
It definitely works. I mean, yeah.
And not going to fall asleep after taking a dog.
No. Right, true.
You can still drive, drinking, and doggy.
You can still drink and dog, but you can't drink and Xanax. At least you should. So, Eliza, now that we've gone off the rails, welcome to our show again. tell us a little bit about your book, Good Rich People.
I feel like every time I hear this, I'm like, I should prepare more. But yeah, basically it's about these two, it's like a wealthy couple. And they're just like super bored, and they live in like the hills of Hollywood, and to entertain themselves, they like play this game where they invite, self-made success stories to come and live in their guest house. And then they completely like annihilate their lives. They're playing one such game when the target is basically not who they think it is. And yeah, it's like a, you know, battle royale to the finish.
We need music to be piped in here. Some sort of wrestling scene.
Thrills.
No, that was a good summation, because sometimes we ask that and people, I think they actually have memorized their synopsis from pitching it and they read it to us. I mean, they don't really read it, but that was a good way of summing it up, and living in the hills there and the bored rich people. Yep.
No, yeah, you, like when you just read the back of the book.
Well, let me tell you, chapter one.
No, don't do it. We read it though, so we know what happens and we know those twists in the battle royale. I know this is one of those books where I'm glad you did say she's not who they thought she was, because I'm like, can we say that? There's so many things like where I don't want to spoil any of it, because
exactly. I was like, how are we going to be able to talk about the book if we can't mention?
And I do. I think though that it even is maybe possibly kind of spoiled right there. So you're probably okay in the little book flap. Although don't read, so they probably they might not read that.
Yeah. I never read the book flap anymore.
They might not even read the book. Who knows?
I mean, no, they should read the book. But I know for me, like, people say, oh, well, what do you put on the back of the book? And I go, as little as possible, because I hate when I'll be reading the back of a book or the inner flap, and it gives away a spoiler that happens a third, two-thirds of the way through the book. And I'm going, Can I just read the book? Are you going to just tell me all of it now? I don't need to read the book now. Thanks. And toss it back.
You know what, though? I actually am the opposite. I have to be spoiled on stuff. Otherwise, it's the anxiety thing. I get really stressed out. And so if I'm reading a book that seems like it has like a twist, or it's like going somewhere like that, then I'll like have to go online and find the spoilers, or I'll read the end first. I'm serious. It stresses me out. And then I read it too fast. I don't enjoy it.
I do that with TV. And every week we read the book. And every week, a lot of times, Allison's a little bit ahead of me. And she's like, I don't want to spoil it for you. But
just tell me.
I'm like, can you please tell me? I'm like, can you just tell me the spoiler?
Yeah. Like. I like, and then I like to analyze like how someone does something. So like, I'll still enjoy it. But so I definitely skip it. If it stresses me out, I can't do it.
Yeah, general sometimes be like, but does, and then she'll fill in the blank, like a character, or like, does the dog die? Does the cat die? Hey, what happens to the kid in this one? I'll be like, all right, the kid's fine. Just keep reading.
I know, I'm like, will I freak out?
Yeah, no, she needs me to be like telling her, it's okay, you can keep reading, it's not going to hurt you, keep going.
And considering most of the books I read are like really dark, I should be over it by now.
But you're not even a little bit. Every single time. It's like, Jen, it's okay. It's okay. But I do like the twists. And when we read twists and it's like, oh, did you see that one coming? Oh, did you? Oh, I didn't see that one, but I saw this one. And then sometimes I think twists are coming that don't happen. Like, I'm just making stuff up. Okay. Tanya wants you to show the book. So Tanya Murphy Mitchell. Oh, it's Tanya Mitchell. She wants you to see the cover again.
Here it is.
There we go. Show us the book.
Tanya is another thriller writer.
Okay. Yes.
Look really closely. Start reading now.
Oh, okay. Jen doesn't have her glasses on, but I can probably do it. I'm usually Dia. I'm like the seeing eye dog for Jen for the show to tell her what's going on.
I know when comments happen, I'm like, I can't see that.
But see, if I took mine off, I don't even, I'm like, hold on. So we just went on at all times.
For those people who are just listening to the audio, Allison did a dramatic zoom in with her face.
Yeah.
And Eliza keeps showing her book to everybody.
She's flashing her book all over
the place.
And Tanya says, awesome. So thank you, Tanya.
Thank you, Tanya.
Tanya has a beautiful cover too, but no missing faces.
No missing faces.
But see, everyone can have missing faces if they want. They just have to remove them.
That
was like
Dick Tracy. So sorry, that's actually why I hate spoilers, because when I was a child and the Dick Tracy movie came out, Emily McClintock, and I'm calling you out, Emily, she's like, oh, wasn't it amazing that Madonna was the blank? And I'm like, what? Like, the movie had just come out, and I'm going, really? We're sitting there at McDonald's trying to get our Dick Tracy Happy Meals, and that's what she goes and does to me. And that's why I don't like spoilers. Moving on.
She's not emotionally scarred about that or anything.
I'm fine. I'm totally fine.
So
go ahead.
I was just going to say, Eliza, tell us a little bit, like, where your inspiration for this book came from. Were you just living in LA and saw some really bored, rich people? And you were like, I bet they do terrible things.
Mm-hmm. You know what? No.
No, everyone in Los Angeles is lovely. I love LA. Cue Randy Newman songs.
Oh my God. Awesome. I love Randy Newman. What a reference. Yeah, to be honest, like, I think that what kind of drove me to write this book is that I lived below the poverty line for like a decade. This was in London, though, where like you can actually survive below the poverty line, unlike in this country. So that is kind of what like drove me to write it. And a lot of like the like experiences in the book, like that Demi talks about, are like things that actually happened to me, but also kind of like weirdly during that time, my late husband was a musician and he like had connections to like super wealthy people and like famous people or whatever. So like we would sometimes go, like he'd play shows, or we'd just go to like these insane parties in like these enormous like mansions or like freaking penthouses like in London. And yeah, we'd just be like rolling up in like our, you know, filthy clothes, like all bohemian. And like, we'd go to like these houses. Like we went to this one penthouse and like, I remember like coming in and it was like, I was like the opening room. It was like you were in a Vegas hotel. Like it was that big, you know? And I went into the kitchen and we were looking in all the cupboards and stuff, you know,
as you do,
trying to steal things. I don't know. No, we were looking for something, I won't say. And, what we found was just bottles and bottles of Moët, like in all of the cupboards and all of the fridges. I don't know if they were like sponsored by Moët or what, but like it was literally, that's like, I like put that in the book, but it was like that, where it was like this weird conflict, or sometimes we'd have the wealthy people come to our houses and they just completely like ruin everything and be horrible. So it was just like that kind of contrast of like being in that kind of situation, I guess. And, but also interacting with like, you know, I won't say who, but you know, people were famous and rich.
Did any of them screw up your toilet? Because like, yeah, that scene, I mean, it's not really a spoiler, but something
that's not a spoiler, but that was a great scene.
I mean, and then,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Like just,
The government eventually came and fixed it. Like, I won't go into guys. I probably should really, I mean, but yeah, it's true.
Well, I mean, I think in some ways the way you describe the kind of complete hedonism / it's not my problem aspect of the rich people are like the way children, or at least my children, behave, where they're like, not my problem. Like, sure, I did that.
Sure, I broke the toilet, Mom, but
seriously, I mean, but just that, I'm going, because that whole idea of like, well, someone else will take care of it. It's not me. That couldn't possibly be me because I did it. There's no connection there.
And also, yeah. I feel like with this, with like wealthier people, they would also just assume you have another bathroom.
Well, there's no understanding of consequences because there aren't any consequences when you're rich. Like you can just like, I mean, I have like kind of have like money now and it's like crazy. Like whenever back then, if something broke, you don't have it anymore.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, and it would be like, it was really a challenge sometimes.
Yep. You were doing without whatever it was.
But you're like, and I'm still sometimes like that, like stuff will break around here and I just don't fix it. Cause I'm like, well, guess that's gone.
Yes, we don't.
And need I have to remind my, like I have some stuff I still haven't fixed. And I'm like, girl, you get it together. It's okay. You can have sprinklers.
You can't in my
Who
house.
Who really needs them, though? Who needs
no,
them?
My six-year-old takes them apart. He goes out and pulls the piece out the middle, because, and then we get, like, Old Faithful in the front yard. He thinks it's really cool.
I've been hosing my plants, because I'm like, oh, it brings me closer to the plants.
It brings me closer.
And you're being practical.
That's really, because that's like, I don't want to spend a couple $100 on a sprinklers, I guess.
No. I feel like,
we're bonding.
If you, like,
Do
I
you
grew up
to them?
I grew up like poor, so it's really hurt. Not that I'm not poor now, but
still there.
But like, yeah, if something broke, you're just like, okay, well, we don't have a TV anymore. Or sure, the faucets are like tied together with string and you have to like retie them to get them to turn off. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But yeah, now we laugh about it. Like if something breaks, we're just like, oh, should we buy a new toaster? How often do we eat toast? Every day, but
daily.
Yeah. What would happen? What would this challenge?
Yeah, or just getting by with things not being quite right. Like for us, it's the irony is they actually replaced our microwave not that long ago when they had to kind of redo our kitchen when our 80-year-old oven decided to die. and the new microwave, the handle broke off. So every time I'm opening the microwave, I'm going under it. And this is why my nails are never good, because they rip every time I'm like shoving my hand under there and yanking it open. And it's like, well, but I don't want to get a whole new microwave and it's a built-in. So I'm just dealing with it. And my nails are awful because of it. Sorry for any close-up pictures where I'm holding books and looking at my nails going, oh, Alice. I'm like,
eh. People are like, look at Allison's poor fingers. She looks like a Dickens character.
We're not going to have a new microwave. Oh my God. No, no, I can't. It's fine. It's really, really fine. We're good.
You guys are on a roll, man.
Yeah, sorry, like, I really couldn't. I wanted to, like, we were joking earlier, I wanted the Moe, but I wouldn't even have Moe. What I have is Almond Creek sparkling cider wine stuff from Trader Joe's, and it is delicious, but it is not that fancy. But I wanted like the bottle to be like still not that fancy. But I would have
bubbles one day. Fancy.
Maybe in time for the sequel.
For the sequel.
Going to be a sequel?
Say gooder, richer people.
they're richer and worse. Yeah.
Richer and better.
Better, rich better, people. Richer people.
Yep. Perfect.
I mean, I don't want to give
these ones have heads.
Yeah. These do have heads. How about it's just the heads and no bodies?
It's just heads, no bodies. Just heads on like a pile of really expensive purses. A bunch of Chanel bags and like a head on top.
You'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Well, but who knows? I do like that you didn't throw the entirety of LA City or LA County under the bus to say they're all horrible. And you didn't say it was terrible people in London, but we can kind of pretend you said it was terrible London people, which is funny because I love London too. And I'm slightly jealous you had to live there for 10 years, but you're like, well, but I wasn't living in the penthouses in London. So it's all good.
Yeah, it was okay.
It still sounds. Nice. I've been there.
It's still
I
was there.
London is a much better. They take care of people a lot better than they do here. So even though it's like, yeah, we were struggling, it was nothing like I would have been homeless if I was in America in that situation. And I mean, the NHS, like
the health system, you could have gotten sick there. You know, like, oh my God.
I went. I did get sick there. Trust me.
10 years and you never got sick. That would have been really impressive. Would have been like
a great place to be.
What vitamins
to be ill? To be honest, yeah.
Perfect. So tell us about your writing process. Is there a process? Is it just whatever's been happening so far on this show? Like, is it word vomit?
And then, I don't know, man. I think I have like the worst process ever. My process, I feel like it's like, no. I write a book and then I like rewrite the entire book and then I like rewrite it again.
Oh, no, see, I feel like that's
it's like not even the same. Yeah, so that's like my process. Right now I'm working on my like third book and I'm like in this point of like, I don't know. I'm trying to like just rewrite the entire thing. I don't even know what's gonna happen. It's chaos.
It's your third book and this is your second book out. So does that mean that the first book that you had out, you got published?
Oh no, wait. Okay, so I've had this Good Rich People is my fourth published book. I just call my third because it's adult. I did two YA books like a long time ago, uh-huh. like 7 years ago under my late husband's last name. And then I did If I Disappear last year. And then I did this one. But yeah.
Okay, because I didn't know you had the YA books. Those aren't mm-hmm. linked when we type in Will because you said you weren't using Frasier. So
yeah, it's a different, I mean, it was Voss. Voss.
Voss.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just try to write as much as I can. I know. Yeah. Usually like I'll just say like right now, I'm just trying to like blast through this. So I'm like, just write 3,000 words a day. Just like do that. And then you can do whatever you want for the rest of the day, but you just have to do that. Yeah.
So do you write and like at the same point in the day? Like do you try to do it in the morning and get it done?
Yeah, I do. Well, I have to do my chores in the morning with my animals. And then after that, I do writing.
I want to see you do them together. Like ride the horse while typing.
That would be fun, I guess.
Yeah, I'm like, you could try.
I mean, I wish I could just do everything on my horse.
So how much difference then is there between, you said you completely rewrite them.
Yeah, 100%. Change,
like 100%. Completely
like plot,
different.
Characters,
except for
setting.
The stuff like, well, no, I guess it was still in LA. But yeah, the characters were different. I mean, the backstory of Demi, since that was like from my real life, that's the only thing that stayed the same. Everything else changed 100% and twice probably. So, you know, and I wrote this version of the book, I think in like 5 weeks. So wow. That was great.
Now the book is great. And I've found there's pretty much zero correlation between how long it takes to write a book and how good it actually is. Because some things it seems like they just show up fully formed, ready to go. And others is like, I worked on this for all this time and we can like still see all the cracks in it going, Could you work on it some more though still?
Yeah.
And I'm just speaking about myself. I'm not even throwing anybody else under the bus. It's just me.
And to be fair, I did work on it for like a year. I just didn't work on that version of it.
I was trying.
Yeah. Your
writing process is you pretty much write 3 novels for every 1 novel that comes out.
Yeah, I'll write like as many novels as it takes. How about to write one?
When you get done with the draft, then did you send, like, what made you go, okay, this draft, this isn't the one? Now, were you making that decision, or did you give it to like your agent or your editor and they push it back and go, Eliza, try again?
It depends. I think, like, to be like on Goodrich People, I just felt like it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. I did feel that way. But also, like, I would get these letters from my editor. I feel like when you get like those, like a big letter when they want like kind of big changes, it's like for me, I'm like, oh, that's a sign that there's really a serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and sometimes you'll try to just incorporate what they're saying into the story that you already have. And it feels like it's like a waste of time because it's like they're asking you to write something completely different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like what I wrote and what your wish I wrote is like so vastly different that I can't bring those two things together.
There is no bridge that big.
Yeah. So it's like you're trying to like figure out what they kind of want, but like also not what they say.
I know it's so confusing.
Like if you read somebody's book and you know it's not working, it's like you wanted a different book. You're trying to help them to fix that book, but maybe you should just be saying,
"Why don't you write this?
Throw that one out."
Yeah, like this book that you wrote, like
politely. This is so good, but I don't like anything about it.
But it's not the right time right now. The market doesn't want this book right now. But it was great. Maybe try writing this.
Yeah, because like when you're a creative person, man, you get like caught up and I'll be like, I am loving this. This is so great. And then it's like, you'll kind of realize, oh, but no, this no one else is going to like it. Like I had fun, but
it was fun for one. That's it.
So what do you do with those drafts? Those like, you know, those orphan drafts.
Never look at them again.
Stay on your computer in like a sad file.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little stubby.
Thousands of books that I've written I'm good at like, that's one thing I will say for myself is like, I'm good at throwing everything out. I'll never look back, mate. Bye. See you later. Because if you get hung up on something, you try to keep something, that usually will destroy a book more than anything.
No, I think that's great. I think that is the whole idea of like, okay, I'm not going to over sentimentalize. I can't even say the word sentimentalize. Is that right? That sounds right. To be going, oh, but it's my baby. And I can't, I mean, for me, I know I just get at the point where I go, I'm pragmatic. And if this doesn't work, then it needs to move on so I can get whatever is going to work out there versus like, but the beauty of my art.
See, I feel like I need like a very short mourning process where I'm like, oh, I'm sad about this. So like I'm drafting third drafting my book now. And I have like huge chunks that are just like highlighted that I'm like, I know I need to delete that, but I just can't yet. So I just highlight the whole thing and write myself a note that's like, next time you read this, delete it.
Like it's the eulogy.
Yeah, I'm like, but I just want it to be there now. Even though it doesn't make sense.
I want to read the nonsense passage. I like those. They're fun.
I feel like most of my work is nonsense passages.
Yeah. We call that literary, Jen.
It's called literary fiction.
Yeah.
But okay, so we have 2 books that were YA and 2 books that are adult. I'm assuming what you're working on now is also adult?
It is indeed also adult.
And it is not the sequel to Goodrich People?
No, it's not. It's about, I like horses, so, and, kind of Orange County connection, but it's basically about, like, the, it's like mothers and daughters in, like, the competitive horse world in Southern California. It's actually based in Rancho Santa Fe, but it's kind of inspired by, I used to work and teach at barns in Orange County and in Los Angeles.
Where in Orange County?
Nellie Gale.
I know Nellie Gale Ranch, yeah.
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 Do you really, really know it, or you just know?
No, I know of it. I'm not a horse. And horses look at me and go, you don't belong anywhere near me. Like that's about it. But like there, where I am in Orange, there are places that are like horse areas and you'll be just going, yep, there's just horses on the road. That's different. And Gorgman and I really don't see that unless you were in the hills and I wasn't. So it's like, there are giant animals and they're on the road.
They're so
should they be there? But I guess, yeah, in certain places, they're welcome. So did the horse, is the horse a murderer? I'd like to see how you'd work that.
I know, I'm like, I already have to know. I hope nothing bad happens to a horse.
I really want to avoid that as much as possible. But, you know, like I said, everything's really on the table right now. So maybe, you know, horse murderer. No, this is, like, I think this is supposed to be more like woman's fiction with a mystery element instead of being like a thriller, right? So it's kind of more like, you know, like Big Little Lies meets Hunting Wives with horses.
Oh, we love May Cobb.
Me too.
To say, May, are you watching? It's May watching.
She's awesome. She did one of my events.
Did she?
We love May. We had her on the show. And so I share a birthday with her Margot. So now she calls me Margot.
Yeah,
and then when you have a Margot in your book, and I'm like, oh, I love all these Margots.
I said to her whenever I was writing this, I was like, by the way, I was like, two of my characters have the same name as your characters. It was before I'd read her book that I wrote this. And I was like, it's like, ugh. I don't want her to think I was like trying to like, you know, I don't know,
the books are enough different. I mean, I think they could sit next to each other on a shelf and be happy.
Yeah, because they're over the top in it.
Yeah, but I just want to know, what is with the name Margot and why are all of them evil? Like, are they all just, if you name a kid Margot, you just you're like, well, Margot. Steer clear. Sorry, Margos.
I feel like the Margos in your book and the Margot in May Cobb's book, and I know hers has the same birthday as me, just give off like real serious Leo energy.
I'm a Leo.
So am I, obviously.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And May's a Leo too? We're all Leos? No.
Only
Margot is.
Margot's a Leo.
I don't know my character's birthdays. What is this?
The only one I ever knew was because I needed to know like when in the year they would have a birthday party because something happens at the birthday party. Otherwise, I don't know. But the fact that it's like, oh, well, this character has a birthday party and Jen's like, oh, she's just like me. I'm like, that's worrisome.
I know. I'm like, we share the same birthday. Like, I'm Margot. Oh, God. And then I was, maybe I'm not.
But okay, it's kind of funny because most of the time when we get a guest coming on and I either will have a book sent to me or I'll pull it on Audible if I want to listen to it, or we get a PDF, I don't look to see, well, what category is this? And I usually don't do anything but just start reading. So how is Good Rich People, how is it classified? Because you're saying what you're working on now is more like women's fiction.
I guess it's a thriller. I mean, you know?
I think it covers like the basics of like what a thriller is. Nice short chapters.
Yes.
It's like moving fast.
Mm-hmm. People die.
There are bodies.
But I kind of like tonally wanted it to be like a black comedy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I felt like it hit that because there were so many places when I started reading it, I'm like, okay, I feel like we've read a lot of books about people who are rich being bad. But then reading how the inner voice of, I think it's Lila.
Yeah.
And just her inner voice was so dark and crisp and funny that I just was like, okay, this is something very different than what we've been reading because it is so over the top.
Yeah, like absurd and camp and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was great. And like, I want it to be like a HBO miniseries.
Oh, I mean, who knows? But I'm working on that right now with some people. So, you know, that's
dream
like the
casting.
Cool, yeah, like, oh my God, can you imagine?
Well, we want to know
I don't know. I don't really think that specifically. I think there's just so many people that could do like good takes on something. I like always want to be open to that. Like, I wouldn't want to be like putting out a name because,
well, it is,
especially if you're really going to cast it. Cause then it's like, she wanted her.
No, I think there was one point that, is it Graham? I'm getting some of the names mixed up.
Yep.
That someone simply gives off like the American Psycho vibes.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, Christian Bale probably is not going to be the right fit for it, but it's just those vibes.
Oh,
that you
I
really
wish.
Like.
I know.
Well, yeah, God, Christian Bale.
I like rewrite the world for you, Christian. Get over
here. I'm picturing the matriarch from Arrested Development as Margot.
Oh, why can't I? Oh, yeah. No, she's awesome.
Yeah,
there's so many. Or like, what is it? Like Catherine O'Hara or something? Like,
she would be amazing.
There's so many people who could do it well.
Yes.
Oh, she'd be great. Yeah. For Graham, I was thinking like, is it Henry Cavill?
Yeah, I guess he does like the look, I guess.
Some when he's like the Superman look, not when he's the Witcher. Or
people have said, when I've spoken to people on the phone and said that, like, Chris Evans, well, he played kind of like that in Knives Out. But you know what's funny? Like, okay, whenever I finished writing this book, that whole thing happened with Armie Hammer, and I was like,
oh, no.
He is Graham!
He
would
have been
perfect. I don't want him to play it. No, we're not. He is, right?
Yeah.
American Psycho.
Hello. You had this one line that I really loved. I'm gonna botch it, so I'm not gonna try to quote it, but it was something along the lines of like, he's really good looking from a distance, but then when you get up close to him, you're like, oh my god, you're gorgeous. Like, the closer he gets, the more the beauty is there, to the point where you almost can't deal with him up close.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be like, who is like that? Where you're like, you get too close to them and it's like you're blinded by
like everybody.
I know. Like hot Hollywood guys. And like, I just love the way you like would describe a smell, like intoxicating, like musky and like animal. And I'm like,
oh my god, now it sounds like Tom Hardy.
Oh gosh, because musky and animal. Yeah, Tom Hardy.
Marlon Brando.
Guys, remember, if we're watching the movie, we can't smell any of them. So the smell has to kind of be taken aside for now, and we're looking more
at the
camera.
Total Marlon Brando Streetcar Named Desire, though.
Oh my god,
standing on the street, all sexy, and you're
like Paul Newman. I'll just cast him as everyone.
Oh, yeah. Paul Newman.
We're doing the de-aging thing. Please don't. We're not doing that. It will not work.
Well, that's exciting that there's, you know, possibly something happening that would make.
Yeah, it's I've like worked on stuff before, and it's just like a really long process, and you really just never know. But, you know, it's like super fun for me.
You're like, hey, whatever, let's do it. Work on the book that you're working on now, and you get the call.
Yeah. I'm close to LA.
These people. I mean, driving there is not any fun, but once you're there, it's okay.
Yeah.
That's those.
Ride my horse over there.
Ride my horse until LA.
Yeah.
Like crazy.
You'll get that reputation when you're like, oh, Eliza, that's that crazy reputation that came up on a horse. She drove a horse.
Yeah.
Eliza, you get off your high horse. Like, on. Literally a horse.
Oh my god.
Okay, but so how is this different? Was the process different for the second book than it was for your first book? Both being adult. And then how did you choose to go from the YA to the adult?
Was the writing process, you mean?
Yeah, because you said like you completely rewrote this book a couple times. But
I feel like I didn't rewrite. I feel like every book I'm rewriting the book more.
Oh boy, this does not bode well for you.
Next time you come on the show, you're gonna go, I have to write it 6 times.
Like tried a couple different ways, but I stopped, and then I finally was like, okay. And then like I wrote it, but I rewrote the ending 3 times. That was like by ending I mean the second half of the book I rewrote 3 times.
The ending this does book not I rewrote that. 3 times. That's a lot more than just the ending.
When I and my YA, like I don't know, my YA, I did rewrite that whole book too. The first one, and then the second one I rewrote a million times, and it's terrible.
So, you mean just the process was terrible?
Don't get it. No, the book was terrible.
Oh, do not go get it.
I sold my first book. So let's go back in time.
Yes.
I was living in poverty with my husband. I wrote the book, which became the Cresswell plot, and sold it for like so much money to us, right? Like crazy. Couldn't believe it, jumping up and down on the bed. My husband died. Woof. 6 months later, like the first check, the weekend I got the first check, he had an accident where he like basically lost the use of his arm. And then he died a month and a half later. And so I was under contract to write another book.
And you're super in the mood to write like a YA book when you're.
Hell yeah. So it was just a nightmare. I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm not over. It'll never be over. Don't worry. But
no. No,
it was a horrible, it was a bad time.
And it's hard when, you know, as creative individuals, like we all do it, like what's happening in our personal life, whatever we're writing at that time, it kind of gets like synced up together. So it's always like, I remember writing blah, blah, blah. And that's when this was going on in my life.
Yeah. And to be fair, like my brain just wasn't working. It was so frustrating. Like I knew it wasn't working but I couldn't make it work. Like I was writing and working all the time. Like, you know, I was trying really hard, but it's like, it is like you have like such trauma that it affects how you can even think.
Yeah.
No, I completely get that. And I feel like there, if people, and it probably varies per person, but I know some people are like, well, if you just sit down and do this, and like you were saying earlier, 3,000 words a day, it's like, I could crank out a ton of words, but they may all be absolute crap. And the difference between being able to put out work when everything's flowing and working and just sitting down and just doing the job, those things are miles apart. And I can't even imagine, like, I know I've never gone through something like that. And to have to be like, oh, I'm on contract, I'm on a deadline. Like, did it allow for you to even grieve in there? Or it's like, no.
They tried. They pushed the book back like a year, but it's just not, you know. It is what it is. You try, all you can do is try, and it's a hard industry, even if you're the best of times.
So what made you go, you know what? I need out of the YA business.
I couldn't even get back into the YA business with a crowbar. Are you kidding me? I'm totally being over the top. No, yeah, like to be honest, it's like I stopped writing for a while. After that kind of whole thing, I was trying to do my option book, and then it was like, I was writing, like, I wrote, like, one summer, I wrote, like, 6 books, and none of them were working. My agent, rejected every one, and I was like, this isn't working. Like, I can't do this job. And so I kind of, like, had multiple kind of things that where I was trying to, like, fix my ability to write, and it kept telling me to stop writing. So I literally said to my agent, let's part ways. I'm going to quit. I was living in London. I moved back to America, got a job at a dude ranch in Northern California. And then 6 months later, I was like, dude, I can't afford to even live. Like, so I need to like, you know, do like go back to writing and so I can get some money. So I used that experience at the dude ranch as like the setting for my novel. I moved to LA, was teaching horseback riding there and writing this book like every day. You know, until I got to that point where I sold it. So it was like, you know, a whole like roller coaster journey, you know. Yeah,
but then you must have had to start again, because if you parted ways with your agent, I'm assuming you just go back to your same agent. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you had a UK agent and then a new American agent, or if it was the same agency or what you did.
No, I went to a different agent, really awesome agent, Sarah Bedingfield at Levine Greenberg Roston. And then she was able to sell it. And then she got me this awesome film agent who was able to get me involved in like the adaption of the book as well. Nice. So it was like, honestly, like, okay, like whenever I was in London, I had like, honestly, probably like one of, if not the top agent in the entire world. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, you could probably know who they, I mean, of course you know who they are, but all the best, their books are always on the bestseller list, right? Like the top bestseller right now is one of her books. Like, she was huge. But it's like the agent I have now and like the setup I have now is the best that I've had. And sometimes it's like, even though it was like hard to like walk away from that, like it was the right choice. You know, you have to like, sometimes I think just trust, like you're kind of follow your heart, you know?
I love how
LA.
I love how she went like Disney princess when she went, oh, your heart, oh, like your voice went up to that.
Don't be okay. Don't be
no. Afraid. And I'm still learning that. I'm the kind who like goes, hey, this situation's bad. Hey, this situation's bad. Hey, this situation's bad. And it's not until like I'm literally on fire and the situation dissolves in front of me where I'm like, well, I guess that's over. And I've yet to do the whole, should you cut ties when things are bad? I don't know what's wrong with me pathologically that I don't like. People could say you need to leave this now, and I go, you're right, I should, but I'm going to just stick it out a little longer.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, it wasn't about anybody else or anything that I left. It was about me. It was just like, I can't keep, this is a really hard job. And there's certain times when you get to a point where you're like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do this. It's so hard. It's like, you put like your heart on like in every book, and every author says this, the amount of like emotional, you know, and sometimes you just don't have it, you know? And it's like, especially obviously like what I've been through. But it's a hard
when there's like the well is dry sometimes. You're just like, there's nothing left. Every ounce of your strength has to be used for things like grieving and healing.
Yeah,
it just does. And it's very hard to be like, I'm going to write anything.
No, you can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important to listen to, especially as when it's a creative job, you have to, everything has to be right, like with yourself before you can even really do it. I think, you know.
Yeah. And otherwise it shows up and you can sit there and you can be like, I'm cranking out pages. And then those are the ones that your agent goes,
yeah, you should throw them away in it.
not working at all. Well, but it sounds like even though you may have to do 16 drafts in your next book? Is that in the ballpark?
I think 16 to 24 is
but the they will be amazing drafts.
How long is a year?
I don't know. If you can crank them out, I mean, 3,000 words a day. I didn't. How long was Goodrich People? Because it read so fast.
It didn't. It's like I mean, it has to be like 85,000. Okay, that's usually what I have to hit.
Because it's usually. It is so funny because I was even just talking to somebody about this today. Like the whole idea of word count and how fast it reads are not related because yours read super, super fast because the short chapters and everything is like, oh, I got to see what's happening next. And the dual
binged it
back and forth. And I'm like, oh. And you have this thing, and I don't even know what to call it because I want to say, is the term asynchronous timeline? Does that make sense? Because you have an asynchronous timeline. Do you know what it means? Am I making
I mean, I could guess. So
I know what asynchronous means when you don't schedule something for a doctor, but
I'm like, no. Well, no, but like, okay, so you've got two narrators who are doing things and you start out with one and then you introduce the other one.
And like overlapping.
Overlapping.
They're overlapping. And there's sometimes where it's like, we're here now with one and then we're starting here and then eventually we do this. So sometimes things are all at the same time, but other times we're moving back and forth. Yeah. So it's not always like usually when you read dual POV, it's like scene here, and you could lie them end to end to get the narrative. And yours, no, you'd have some of them overlapping and sometimes going back. So but that whole way you did it worked so well. And it really drove the narrative forward because you're like, oh, where are we? Oh, now we get to see what they were doing in that. Oh, and what were they thinking when this happened? Because this was just crazy. And I can't believe they did this. And she just let that happen. All of that really made it move really quickly. So.
Oh, interesting.
I liked it because I don't remember reading a book like that where it had that lack of synchronicity. Is that a better term? I'll stop making up words now.
No. I think that the word you used was
Yeah. It's a good word. Good word.
Yeah, Allison. We liked it. Don't worry.
Okay. The other day for my real job, I had to write the word asynchronous 1,000 times because I was taking notes on something and I spelled it differently. I was because of a bill in Congress.
Right, but what bill had asynchronous in it?
It's a telemedicine bill about scheduling telehealth. And if you can do asynchronous scheduling where it's kind of first come, first serve, da da da. Nobody cares. We can edit this part out. Edit this part out, Roman.
It's live.
Edit this part out.
Can you edit out reality to remove this part?
Edit out the reality of
we do but that.
My point was I did not know how to spell asynchronous. And when I went over my notes afterwards, I was like, I spelled it wrong every time and differently every time.
I'm just I didn't know it was a word, so you're ahead of me.
Yeah. Just, it's one of those words.
I believe that it is, though. I don't know a lot of words. Trust me. That might be the writing problem.
I had to find some new words.
I feel like that every day when I play Wordle. I'm like, shouldn't I know more 5-letter words? I'm always just like, I don't know, juicy? That's the only one I have.
No, but I liked how that really helped push it forward. So it felt very fast to me. So I don't know how quickly you were able to crank out that later draft, and hopefully whatever you're working on now will feel like it'll feel like it's coming fast to you. So you weren't like, hey, I'm on draft 7 and I just want to sit there and poke at the letter S or something.
I need to put asynchronous in this next book.
You do.
Next time. I'm going to find out what it means first.
Asynchronous murder.
Just give me some time.
You have to have because horses Google have such help. Crazy names sometimes. It should be asynchronous. Asynchronous da da da.
Instead of Seabiscuit.
Yeah, for a show name.
It's the show name.
I know what you mean. Silly show names. I'll find a way. Don't worry.
Yeah. That was with the dog names too. It's like, yes.
There'll be two sales that I'll make if I do
that. I know. We'll be like,
oh, no, you'll get it for free. So
we'd buy it anyways. If asynchronous.
Yeah, did you know that she named her book after us?
Yeah. She named the horse after us.
Yeah, that's better than the book, isn't it?
Okay. On that note,
we'll be good.
I hate to say we are out of time. Eliza, you've been incredible. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Yay! Everybody stay tuned for our next episode, which will be Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. on Pacific Standard Time. Is that right?
Pacific Standard Time. Yes, we're free.
Okay. I'm like, I don't know. I should know this. It's been like a year and a half. We will be talking with author Jason Starr about his new novel that's coming out in June called The Next Time I Die, and his graphic novel, which is, I can't remember the name of the graphic novel. Allison, you read it. Something Flame.
Is the word fling.
Casual fling.
Casual fling.
Casual fling.
I'm just picturing, it's a graphic novel, so I'm picturing the mask mostly. That does not help me remember the title at all.
So, anyways, Jason Starr.
We had to know two of them. We had to know both
titles. Two titles. That's why I'm like, I can only put one in my brain.
Well, I didn't get either one in right, because I keep, whenever I try to pull it up on my computer to read it, I keep trying to type in The Next Time I Die, but that's not it. It's The Last Time.
Last Time I Die. Next Time I Die. I can't remember.
You have to write it on my arm with a Sharpie. Fine.
You guys have a couple days to find out.
Yeah.
So. Figure it out.
We'll figure it out. We've got plenty of time. So thank you, everybody who is watching live. If you are watching this on the replay on YouTube, make sure to hit like and subscribe for our new official Vox Vomitus YouTube station. If you're listening to this just on Anchor, just drop us an email. Tell us hi. We will see you all next week.